The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, please check out professionalcasual.com.
The Professional Casual Network has gear. Check out teespring.com/store/professionalcasual for fresh new swag. A huge shout out to our sponsor, BeardedDragonGames.online. Pick up all your local game store goodness from Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, or WFURP 4th Edition, as well as terrain, paints, board games, comics, and more. Make sure to use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout for free domestic shipping or PCME10 for 10% off your total order at bearddragongames.online. Also, a special thanks to Built Bar for sponsoring the show. To get 10% off your order and to help support the show, use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout or use the link in the show notes.
Hey, my electric casuals, and welcome to another episode of Beards, Ears, and Skulls, the best old world podcast on the internet. I'm Taylor, your personal grudge bearer, and with me, you know, Dan, I don't actually know if I can call myself that anymore, out of the amount of Slaanesh that I've been playing lately.
Oh, so but what does that make you instead?
I don't know if I want to come up with a new Slaaneshy name, though.
You can do it.
Based on the episode title, which is probably going to be Cox and Pies, I could come up with some sort of name. But anyways, Dan's here.
Hi.
Before we get started, though, Dan, calm down. I want to send a huge Slaaneshy and Dowie thank you to our beautiful and wonderful patrons who support us over at patreon.com/professionalcasual. These folks help us do what we do every day, keep the lights on, and keep Tim from eating his Cox and Pies. How many times are we going to say it this episode?
Well, I think it's important to establish early on that we mean roosters.
Yes, for sure.
Literally.
Like cock-a-doodle-doo. And how about you? Anyways, huge thank you to our current big subbies. We've got X-Paxis and Rob and Iron Maze and Tau and Dagna and Bicon and Briar Mage and Cider Drinker and Kilted Sparky and Leroy and Otis and Random Guy and Cliff Jumper and Velicenda and Speaks with Wind and Pagan Prince and David and Handsome Andy and Brooks and Chris Dillard and Cord. Woo. Those are some big subbies. That's a big list of big subbies. Thank you so much, everybody. Dope. And listen, folks, if you like this show and you love some old world, head over to patreon.com/professionalcasual and sign up to the Electric Casual tier. If it's open, I have no idea how many slots there are or if it can close. But anyways, our Electric Casuals are Tony M, Meerkat, Stefan, Rev Right Mad, Cliff, Elite Eight Showdown was canceled, Anthony Manuel, Daniel Harris, Lil Willie, Carlos, and Nick Barron. Thank you, everybody, for your support. Ladies and gentlemen, time for Games Played in Hobby.
Games Played Hobby. We're going to have a whole episode about the games played yesterday. Mm-hmm. We had our narrative event of Siegen, you know, Scale the Walls, and Taylor and I both played a couple awesome games against Brooks and our pal Andy, who did one of the Orc and Goblin episodes.
Yeah.
A long
Andy's
way back.
Such a good dude.
Brooks it was super fun.
It was such a good time.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You know, check out the Discord for tons of pictures of it. I'm going to try to remember to write up a blog post about at least my games.
Hell yeah.
And like what we kind of learned for the narrative stuff. And we're going to do some, you know, more in the future. We told Brooks that we're going to, you know, we'll travel to Massachusetts next time.
Yes, absolutely.
Try something a little bit different. But it was a blast. I brought Beastmen, and it was super fun to play Beastmen. I rolled so many Gaze of the Gods, and not a single stupidity was rolled.
Hell yeah.
Unheard of.
The gods were looking down on you, gazedly. Yeah, and I played Slaanesh. I got to get my dwarves on the correct size base at this point. There's too much going on. But anyways, it was
always
such...
Always
too much. It was such a dope time. Brooks came up with, which I think was the last episode, right? That we went over the scenarios, and check them out because they were super fun. The city fight, we all kind of agreed, was a little, it could use a couple of tweaks. But the siege battle, honestly, Brooks knocked that out of the park.
The siege was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. The
great siege rules
in the city needed some work, which, you know, we can now improve it after playing a couple games of it and having a bunch of feedback.
Side tangent, it was super fun.
It was still super fun.
Yeah.
It was still a fun game, but it was like, you know, for the scenario mechanics, we can improve that.
Yeah, for sure.
But oh my God, the siege was such a blast. Being able to take out guys in the tower and then taking control of the cannon. But I was playing Beastman, so I said, I'm just not going to do that. I tried to play the character, you know, and at one point it was like, well, I have a unit of, I have a Beast Lord and some gore here. I could charge these Iron Drakes. Mm-hmm. Or I could go in the tower, which is one of the like victory point objectives, and it gives me access to a cannon. I was like, but the Beastman would never do that. I'm just going to charge these guys. Oh, crap, you killed all my gore, and there's just the Beast Lord left? Whoops.
Whoopsies.
Whoopsies.
I was the defender on the siege one, the take the city, the wall fight, and I just stood in front of the closed gate waiting for a giant to break it down so I could get out. I was like,
you could have just opened the gate.
I couldn't. There was a giant there. It was too close. Oh,
right, because if they're too close, you can't open the gate. I did forget that.
So he broke the gate down and then got charged by a soul grinder and some fiends and got promptly killed.
His poor giant did not have a good day.
No, it was not a giant's day out.
Yeah, because my Gorgon just ran rampant through his orcs and goblins. It was awesome. I never seen the Gorgon perform so well.
That thing is disgustingly terrifying, and I hate it.
Oh, yeah.
And Andy himself has said he's never wants to see another one on the table.
Yeah. He's like, you know, just make sure he doesn't bring the Gorgon again. And I was like, too bad. He's a mainstay in the list.
Yeah, absolutely. You should get another one.
I do need another one because you can take two at 2,000 points. They're just cheap enough.
I mean, there's a tournament coming up, so, you know, it's a thing that could happen.
Well, we've talked about this before, is if I take that, then I can't take the Shaggoth.
That's true. Yeah, and I love Shaggoth. The Shaggoth is what you got in. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Totally fair. Yeah, I'm kind of upset that I can't take two greater demons. 2,000 points. Oh, shucks.
Oh, no.
Can't take two 475 greater demons. 475 points.
Just make it cheaper.
No, I can't. I certainly can.
Can you really not take two?
I think it's one greater demon.
I'm pretty sure that's right.
Zero to one.
I want to double check that quick.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
And I could absolutely make it cheaper, but no.
Because like 1,000 points, you can take, or at 2,000 points, you can take 1,000 points of demons. Yeah, zero to one greater demon.
Yeah.
But you could take a greater demon and a demon prince.
Which I usually do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, they're the cheaper of secrets. Cheaper of secrets is 330 points.
Cheap. It is the cheaper compared to the other greater demons. But
I mean,
it's funny that we're talking about greater demons because the topic of today's show is about as far from a greater demon as you can get in the Warhammer world.
Yeah, it's the Shire. Oh, wait, no, it's the Moot.
Don't do that. I'm going to look back through the Discord really quick because we got a request to do a lore episode specifically on the Moot and Halflings because they're awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty dope.
They're so fun. They're a good mix of, like, you know, Tolkien, Halflings, Hobbits, and a bit of their own flair to make them Warhammer-y.
The way I kind of see Warhammer Halflings is if you took Tolkien's Hobbits and just made a caricature of them, right? Make them shorter, make them fatter, make them love food even more, like, and you've got the Moot.
That's pretty fair, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Of course, I can't find that message, but I can search.
You certainly can. So that's why the episode is titled Cocks and Pies. Or Pies and Cocks, excuse me. Pies and Cocks, that's what it is.
Oh, it was Brooks.
Yes, it was, yeah.
I just found it.
And honestly, besides ogres, it's probably one of the Blood Bowl teams that I really would like to have.
For real.
They're so funny.
I love that you mention ogres because they're the closest relatives.
Oh, it's so good, dude.
So real quick, I'm assuming this is going to be a lot of me telling you about halflings and the moot, which yes, obviously please. Anything you do know, you can throw in there. Most of my prep for this is based off of the Archives of the Empire Volume 1 for cool. Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the 4th edition. It's a fantastic book that gives a bunch of details on halflings. It goes over the moot. And then the Laurel Lorn Forest in the northern part of the Empire and the elves that live there. And then Carrick Asgaraz and some dwarves. And there's a couple other things thrown into the book as well. Not thrown in, but other bit about the grand provinces of the Empire, halfling clans of the Empire, and then new careers, like the Badger Rider.
Which is so cool.
Right? It's so funny, though, because they didn't make stats for a badger for like 3 years after this book came out. And then it wasn't actually, you have to still have to change it to be able to ride it because it needs to be bigger than you.
That's not the point.
No, it's pretty fantastic.
Real quick, I just want to plug the Blood Bowl team for for the halflings. I'm pretty sure that they have two different balls. One is a pie, is a hand pie. Uh-huh. And the other one is a sandwich. I can't get over
it. It's so good. Yeah, the Blood Bowl stuff is just so full of character. Like,
oh my gosh,
man. I hate that there's a gnome team, but I love that it's so like Dave the Gnome, Garden Gnome type gnomes. makes it a little bit better. And they have like one of the bases just has a goose on it. One has a fox. There's a badger. Like, there's such weird stuff. I love that.
Oh, man. Blood Bowl is a ridiculous game. Just absolutely ridiculous.
But a bit about halflings here. So halflings in the Warhammer world, they're not really part of the old world in terms of the miniatures game, but you can get models for them. They did create models. There was like the Halfling Hot Pot, which was a war machine that exactly what it sounds like. There was a big old pot of stew, and they would launch it with like a big old slingshot.
And oh my gosh, yeah.
It was an awesome like stone thrower that if you got hit with the pot, it was like a big hit. But then the rest of them just took like low strength, but I think it ignored armor stuff from the hot soup.
See, and the reason I remember this mini is because the dude who's standing there with the cleaver is one of the most terrifying miniatures I've ever seen in my life.
So good.
He's so creepy, man. Those teeth and yeah. His toenails are like claws.
Oh, God. Now I have to look it up.
Okay, I'll send it to you. It's so scary.
Oh, right. He is like terrifying looking.
Yeah, he's such a creeper.
I don't like it. And then they also had halfling archers back in the day that were like a, what do you call it? A regiment of renown. But a lot of people just use them as like empire archers. Mm-hmm. So they had a little bit of their own rules back then. Obviously not in the old world. I was a little sad that we didn't get them with the Empire Arcane Journal, but that's not to say we never will.
Sure.
But we can't ignore that they're halflings in the Warhammer world. They are hilarious.
Yeah.
They're a race created by the old ones, like pretty much all like the humanoid races. And they were them and the ogres were the last two races that the old world old ones created. And they ended up making them very similar. Basically, ogres, they just were like, wouldn't it be funny if we took a human and then just made it, split it into two. I made one really big and hungry all the time and one really small and hungry all the time. That'd be great. So ogres usually won't eat halflings because they share this like innate kinship with them. Mm-hmm. Like they will if they have other choice.
Listen, if they're hungry.
If they're real hungry. But like it's kind of like a faux pas for ogre to eat a halfling. And it's like the halfling is going to make you better food than it would be anyway.
Yeah, true. It probably has better food in its back pocket. So,
yeah. So first thing I had in my notes here was the corner of the empire that halflings control is called the Moot, or officially known as the Grand County of the Mootland. It is an official empire province, even with their own elector count, Hizmi Stoutheart, which is so funny to think that they have a Runefang. Because they're a province. I just love the idea of a halfling trying to wield a Runefang because they're like huge swords. Like, I don't think the rules for them don't make them two-handed weapons because they're so like perfectly balanced and light.
being, you know, perfect rune weapons, but like just the idea of this halfling trying to wield a sword like at least twice as long as they are tall, easily. But this Elector, Hizmay, is not really a fighter. I love her description in this book, though. It says, a cosmopolitan, well-traveled figure who lived in Altdorf most of her life, she's been able to appeal to halflings across the empire and all clans. She's seen as a unifying and stabilizing interest. She is, however, thinking of retiring, as she is now 159 years old and becoming a little forgetful and quite arthritic. She delays year after year because she has yet to find a suitable replacement. So I should point out here, just realize that at the time of the old world, Hizmi's not been born yet.
Sure.
But they do have a successful line of electors there anyway. The moot was established back in 1010 of the imperial calendar as a joke.
What?
It was a joke to piss off the Elector of Stirland. The emperor at the time was Ludwig the Fat, and he created the county to take away land from Stirland.
Oh my god.
But there's also historical evidence that Emperor Ludwig had a halfling jester who influenced this decision.
That's so good.
Like, just the creation of their land. Like, it was already where all the halflings lived anyway. Uh-huh. But, like, the emperor and the emperor at the time, Ludwig the Fat, I love that that's his name, and the Elector of Stirland just didn't like each other and whatnot. So, to punish him, he's like, all right, well, I'm going to, by, imperial decree, create a new province of the empire. And it's just going to be, it was yours, but now it's theirs.
Oh, by the way, they need a rune fang, so go talk to the dwarves real quick, would you?
God, it's so good.
That's incredible.
The Grand County of the Mootland, they just call it the Moot for short, because why not, is known for its halflings, because they are virtually the entire population. There are some humans that live there, very few, some ogres live there. Virtually no dwarves or elves, because they don't like halflings generally because they're weird. I love halflings are so culturally different from humans in the Warhammer world. Like, they are,
yeah.
Not only do they look different being, 3.5 feet tall with big hairy feet and curly brown hair pretty much all the time, but they're just culturally, they are very non-human.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Humans don't understand halflings. Halflings don't understand humans because they just live different types of lives. And I think Warhammer has done a great job with that over the years to establish that between humans and elves and dwarves, they all feel like very different species. It's not just dwarves are short humans that like the mountains. Like, there's so much more to them than that.
Right. Yeah. So something that we always talk about every time we go over or talk about an army or go over lore is just how awful everything is all the time, right? Like, if there's anywhere that you could wake up in the Warhammer world, one of the worst places to just be a random person is the Empire.
Yeah.
Unless you're in the Moot. Because the Moot's dope. It's just this good food all the time. If something's not nailed down, you're going to lose it, but yep. It's just like fun. It's just a fun place to be.
The Moot literally has tourism,
right?
Like, that's unheard of in the Warhammer world. This is pretty much the only place, one of the very few places where people actually go just to go visit and vacation, and the halflings hate it. So a little bit more about the creation of the Moot, because I absolutely love this. So Ludwig the Fat made it as a joke, but he tried to make it temporary.
Okay.
So he said that to be an elector of the Moot, you have to have been born in the province.
Oh.
And the next election cycle was only 3 months away, and he's like, boom, got him. Obviously, they can't be born in the Moot. Little did he know, halfling gestation period is only about 3 months. So,
boom, got him.
First elector was a newborn halfling baby named Okay, there's got to be a joke here. The name is
Trichidus. I can't even, I don't know how to say it.
Pultritudinous
or Trudy, tall tree. And this began the tradition of familial rule in the moot, where even though like Hizmi is the current elector, as of 2512, she doesn't rule alone. They have a, like, not only advisors, but halflings live very communal, close-knit lives anyway. You know, they say like it takes a village to raise a child. Mm. Halflings embody that. They share everything, even their children.
Right. And like I said, if it's not nailed down, you're going to lose it. It's not because they're thieves. They don't understand possession.
Well, so they're thieves to other cultures.
Correct.
Right. But in their mind, it's like, well, this is ours, not yours. Right. They don't really have a concept of this belongs to me, that belongs to you, because everything is shared by everybody.
Right.
In the moot.
So it's pronounced pulchritudinous.
Okay.
And it means beautiful.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Aw, pulchritudinous. Thank you for double checking that, because that was a big word.
Sorry. Yeah. I've never seen that in my life. But anyways, go on.
Right. I'm surprised it's not a joke. Like, it means, right? Like short and fat or something. Short and stout.
No, it's the opposite. It's beautiful, tall tree.
I love that.
Right?
But yeah, so halflings are really interesting in that way. And it's so fun to play with them in a role play setting when the halflings, like, people are like, where'd my thing go? And they're like, what? Oh, I thought that was ours. And they're like, I don't even know you. But my favorite joke in this whole book, The Archives of the Empire, is in part of a big timetable that goes from even before the moot was established. But in 719 Imperial calendar, so about 300 years before the moot was established, there was the Second Pai War. Ended in 719. Because Emperor Leopold Ramsidholm, sorry, Elder, not Emperor, Elder Leopold Ramsidholm.
This is so ridiculous.
It's so good. Establishes a ruling body to end all future pastry disputes, which we could go into more detail if we needed to. However, he was easily bought, so it became known as the Pay Leo Diet.
Stupid.
It's so dumb, but so amazing. The paleo diet.
Oh my god, it hurts.
Yep.
Why doesn't everyone play halflings all the time?
I don't know. Well, so years ago when we first were looking at this book, our friend, you know, friend of the network, Bastion, who we haven't heard from in a long time. So if you're around Bastion, we'd love to hear how you're doing. But miss that guy. We were starting to write an all halfling campaign that took place in the moot. And the idea was that it would start out as all like happy, like there's a festival, you play in these games and blah, blah, blah. And it becomes really more like solving everyday problems as characters within the moot. And then, you know, everything changed when the undead attack, kind of thing.
Naturally. Yep.
And we'll talk more about why that's a thing. But I love that the Second Pai War started because Tartly Tongue Burden Blouse invents a topless pie and calls it a tart.
Oh, all right. That's kind of a big deal.
It's so good. Oh, my God. So the halfling. So obviously pies are a big thing. The halflings love pies more than anything else, whether it's fruit pies or mincemeat pies or whatever. They're said to have a different like holiday or festival or some kind of celebration every week of the year that involves pie.
Okay.
In some capacity. So it's like the traditional, you know, whatever pie that goes along with this holiday. That's usually nonsense. And they have their biggest festival the whole year is called Pie Week, because it's a full week at least of festivals and feasts and pies. Love it. So why we're calling this episode Pies and Cocks is that the heraldry of the moot is a rampant cock on a field of green. A rooster.
Yes,
it's a rooster. Mm-hmm. and The halfling, as I wrote in my notes, the halflings still love to joke about everything, even their own symbology, right?
That's fair.
So the coat of arms is completed by a crossed hammer with a twin-tailed comet, you know, to reference they're part of the empire, and then a butcher's knife, of course.
Yeah.
And halflings reproduce often and quickly, so the moon is densely populated. It's actually the most densely populated portion of the entire empire.
That's insane.
Right? Partly because their gestational period is only 3 months. We can have babies so fast.
Yeah, the friggin' leader's 159. Jeez.
And it says they're welcoming to outsiders as they love to prank them and make money, but there are virtually no human-sized buildings or furniture in the moon.
All right, so,
like, they'll be like, yeah, you can come visit, but I guess you could push a few beds together in the inn to fit. So, like, they act welcoming, but they really don't like the big folk stomping around their place. They just want to live in peace and farm and eat pies. So when humans show up, they're like, all right, let's have fun with this then. And they will just mess with them. They will charge them for the most ridiculous things. They'll take them on tours around while they're fleecing them and, you know, pickpocketing, because what's yours is ours mentality.
Yeah.
And people often leave the moot much poorer than when they got there.
God, I love that.
They're so good. Yeah, because they have this thing called the Grand Tour.
Mm-hmm.
So some examples of what they do for people that show up. I love the writing of in this book. It says halflings are natural pranksters, but the Mootland halflings have concentrated this art form, being seen as the mysterious place of exotic halfling culture and having a steady stream of tourists and traders means the Moot's biggest export is now grandiose myths about the traditions, mores, and legends of the county. Some of these include insisting that every week is cock festival, requiring tourists to purchase a large purple cockerel, which the halflings insist be hung on the wall back home to bring good fortune. Inventing outlandish halfling history, regaling tourists with the tales of epic battles and particularly unique troops such as swan riders and badger knights. And then it says halfling ram cavalry are real, however, and terrifying to behold. So I'm not sure why the book had a badger rider, not a ram rider, but still.
Yeah, I have a whole list of like a halfling military from the wiki.
Oh, nice.
It definitely mentions swan riders.
They're not real, though.
They're apparently not real.
They lead tourists into the woods for quote, snark hunts. A mysterious beast that can only be seen if tourists cover themselves in mud and leaves and hum the mating song. Similar legends include bowel bears.
Oh my God.
That can tunnel into privies in the middle of the night. Dust monsters that hide under beds and bee holders, arboreal canids that carry beehives in their mouths. They love to have people eat disgusting food and drink, either raw and gruesome or filled with incredibly hot spice, claiming it's a delicacy.
This needs to be an army.
Right? And then elaborate cultural rituals that the visitors are assured of being mandatory. One involves visitors being chosen to be the cheese wife, a position of great honor, where one must ceremoniously marry a great block of cheese. The wealthier the customer, the more they are milked for wedding ceremony costs. The writers of this book must have had such a good time.
Oh, man.
This whole bunch. Oh, man, there's a lot of people listed here.
Oh, my gosh. Hang on. I'm reading some of these military things. I just got to housewives.
What?
Halfling women folk are not to be messed with. They're uncannily strong, unerringly hit the mark when there is a punch to be thrown, and due to years of child rearing and housework are incredibly tough. The sight of one of their menfolk being killed is enough to drive them into bloodlust.
Oh, that's so good. It's like they're mama bears, but halflings.
They're like baby bear-sized mama bears.
Yeah. you know, the Moot is a great place for tourism. It's a great place for jokes. The halflings love it. Like you said, they do have a bit of a military, though. They are in the Warhammer world still. They can't be all jokes and pies. They are naturally peaceful people, but they do have warriors. Their big thing are people called field wardens.
Yeah.
Trained fighters specializing in neutralization of the undead. Sylvania is the province that borders the east of the Moot.
I was just going to say, it's remarkably close, isn't it? Like,
oh, yeah. It's right there. Yeah. And so the undead often wander into the Moot, especially on the eastern side, so they have to protect themselves. And they go in, like, patrols. They're armed with staff slings and are preeminent ambushers, of course.
Yep.
This is while there's a sizable population of ogres here as well, they are not regarded as needing protection. Halflings look out for only halflings in the Moot.
Oh, fair enough. I think ogres could probably look out for themselves, to be honest.
That's a big part of their philosophy there, is that, like, well, they don't need our help. They're yeah, 18 right. times our size, you know? Like, they're ogres. They're fine. The thing is, they don't, like, the halflings are still proud enough of their own, like, heritage and everything. It's like they still want to do it on their own.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Right? So they have that, they want to keep that bit of pride and be like, we can protect our own borders. We don't need ogres to do it for us, even though we probably could convince them to.
Right. And field wardens are actually another thing taken almost directly from Tolkien, because these, I don't remember what they were called, halfling, in the Lord of the Rings series in Tolkien's works. I don't remember what halfling field wardens are called. But essentially, there's the same thing. They're skirmishers that go around with slings in the woods. Just big folk or orcs get too close and they just snipe them in the head.
Yeah. Same, similar idea there, except, well, there are, you know, sometimes greenskins, but really mostly undead.
Yeah. But I feel like I've been in a Warhammer Fantasy roleplay campaign where somebody had a sling staff.
That sounds familiar.
Right? A thing is dope as hell. It's just a sling on a stick.
It's basically just a sling with a longer range.
So cool.
But good stuff. So I'd love to see, like, just give us a, you know, in the Second Empire Arcane Journal or whatever.
Yeah. Ambushing or scouting halfling sling stickers.
Staff sling field wardens. Yes.
Yeah, that'd be so, so dope.
Great. Give them an additional minus. So there's skirmishers, obviously, unit strength one, light infantry or regular infantry. Give them a further minus one to hit them with shooting because they're small.
Yeah, and make them toughness too.
Give them 18-inch range slings.
Yeah, because they got longer range slings.
BS4.
Oh, and then like Armor Bane 2 or something.
Yes, to represent them, like they always aim BS4, for the head. Shut up. I was waiting. Remember how good like Merry and Pippin were at throwing rocks? Like,
yeah.
You know, we're gonna lean into that with these halflings, halfling field wardens. Yeah, we're gonna end up standing them up now. I'm gonna do that.
That's not Merry and Pippin though. That's, oh, did I lose Dan? Are you still there?
Yeah.
Hey, hi, you're still here.
I'm still here.
That's not Merry and Pippin though. That's halflings in Tolkien world. They are really good at throwing rocks.
Yeah. Well, just using that example, because we saw them like sitting on Treebeard, hucking rocks at goblins and hitting them in the face and everything. So I love this idea. Let's make them a special choice for, well, I guess that's not really how it works anymore. But in a Grand Army, an Empire Grand Army, they're a special choice.
Yeah.
They're only strength 2, but the sling staff, I feel like, should be probably just strength 3.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And then Armor Bane 2. So you just get, a couple lucky sixes in there.
Yeah, I like Armor Bane 2 a lot. So good.
It's so
but
stupid.
I think they'd be strength and toughness 2.
Yeah.
They're weapon absolutely. Skill 2, but ballistic skill 4.
Shut up. It movement, makes sense, but I hate it.
Movement 4. Because even though they're really short, they're actually pretty quick on their feet.
Nice shirt.
Oh, thanks. I was trying to look at my GM screen to see if I had the typical halfling movement for WFRP, which is usually the same as old.
Well,
world
yeah,
anyway.
I was just gonna say when an Empire army marches to war, usually there's halflings and they don't have an issue keeping up at all.
Yeah, it's interesting because they're smaller than dwarves, but they typically. I have to look back at older editions. Were those halflings movement 3?
Right,
that would make even a skirmishing scout unit rough.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Ask me how I know.
Right. Exactly. I think making the movement 4 is fine.
Mm-hmm.
because like they just run everywhere. They got to take a million steps to get there, so they're just always running. Let's see, we give them evasive. Let's yes. give them
fire and flee,
quick shot, fire and flee. Every reaction possible, so they're not in combat because they're going to be weapon skill 2, toughness 2, with maybe light armor. No,
you know what? While we're at it, drilled veterans, keep going. Now
they're skirmishers; they don't even need that. You could upgrade in a veteran. Why not? What else is there? What are you missing? Terror, obviously.
if they cause a wound, just one wound, immediate panic.
Yeah,
you have no
Where'd
idea
where come from.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I love that. You could put them in ambush, and they can add the ambush on a 3+.
Oh yeah, actually, I don't hate that.
They don't suck at ambush.
Like everything else, ambush is so brutal.
It's just not great unless you have a way to improve it. Yeah, I love these guys. They're so good. What else we got? Oh, we're talking about psychology and how they're different from humans.
Yeah.
There's a popular saying in Stirland, you know, which the Moot used to be part of, that goes, there's no law for halflings. And the Moot, this is generally true. It says halflings have a lack of the concept of ownership compared to humans. They live very communally, often with extended families living in one large, I put for them, house. They embody the idea of it takes a village. Halflings do have laws, though, but their punishments are almost always financial because they don't believe in removing people. They don't believe that removing people from society is good because they see it as a loss of labor and a waste of everyone's time.
Fair. All right.
If it's a truly heinous thing like murder, which doesn't happen often in the Moot at all, it's incredibly rare, they might serve a short time in some kind of jail. And then are basically on probation forever.
Oh, fair.
Yeah. Right. They're watched closely, but it said that, you know, somebody's, the murderer of someone's brother might end up working with them in the fields later because they need them. The community needs them.
I'm looking at your next thing. Drinks come in thin vases a foot tall.
Yeah, so I was talking about the Grand Tour and whatnot.
So good.
Gets a tourist. So they make the halflings make pains to let the big folk know they aren't welcome passive aggressively. they are well, it's so funny to me that they are super welcoming of tourists because they know they can make money off of them, but they don't like it. Yeah, so the drinks come in thin vase a foot tall. Crockery is twice as long as it should be. After all, halflings don't know what humans need and can thus, quote, innocently make mistakes. If the humans don't like it, of course, they can be pointed to the ogre lodgings most Moot towns have. But staying with ogres is far, far worse. The smell alone can prove fatal. And that was just copied and pasted from the book. It's so good.
It's so good, man.
Oh, my God.
I just halflings are always the best. So to go over, like, if they were to come to the old world. I almost said Warhammer Fantasy Battles. The old world, like some of the military.
The same thing.
Right. No. some of the infantry is some of the things we could see is I could see like cooks, right? Cooks would be a very important part of society.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. The backbone.
And there's something in here. It says within their units are crazed cooks who have eaten too many spicy dumplings. They hide amongst the regular cooks in their unit, jumping out during battle, whirling their heavy cook pots around. I was like, oh, that's just, that's a fanatic. right? Pantry guards are cooks with more than a reputation for their culinary skills. They're bodyguards for the halfling chuck wagons. And if we scroll down a bit, the halfling chuck wagon is the army's battle standard. It carries the rations for the day.
Oh my God, what? Can you show, give me the link for this you're looking
there's,
at. This
there's no sounds... picture, unfortunately, but it's just oh my so God. Good. There is a picture for one mini that I didn't know existed. We'll go over that in just a second here. that's the wrong, that's not even the link.
Good job.
So sorry.
Proud
I
of
sent
you.
You the word Pertrunculogrinus.
Pertrunculogrinus?
Yeah, whatever that word was. There you go. Boop. Okay. So the mini that they have is the halfling half tank.
What?
Want? This one's named Kathleen. It's armed with a soup
it's
cannon.
Named Kathleen. I see it. Oh, it's got like half of a steam tank on the front.
Yep, it's a independent model called the Half Tank, or as an alternative scrapped launcher for the Ogre Kingdoms. It's so good, man.
That's amazing.
A freaking soup cannon? Come on. But yeah, we've gone over the Halfling Hot Pot.
Oh!
Yeah?
I totally forgot about the actual, what's it called? What are those, the Dogs of War, Regiment of Renown?
Yeah.
Were you going to say that one?
No.
Lumpen Croup and his fighting cocks.
Oh man, that's so good.
And according to the wiki here, it says Lumpen Croup was a former thief and poacher before he became a mercenary, using his skills of stealth and tracking to mold the Fighting Cocks Regiment into what they are today. Ever since then, Lumpen has shown great compassion towards his fellow halflings, staying up for hours to create his ingenious plan that would hopefully bring him and his company victory on the battlefield.
Incredible.
So this one, they had a unit of models back in the day. And the standard bearer was Ned Hamfist.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's the models. They got swords and bows.
Dope.
And the standard bearer has just a rooster on top of, like, standing on an arrow, kind of like a weather vane. But Lumpen Croup's fighting cocks. I forgot about those guys.
Yeah, and to keep into the chicken theme, right? Halfling war beasts, poultry swarms make use of chickens, geese, turkeys, and ducks that can be driven and raged into a battle. Could you imagine just a bunch of geese coming at you as you're like on a battlefield? That would
geese
be horrifying.
Geese are so mean.
They're so mean. Like chickens, I don't care about, but geese are jerks.
I want this army so bad. I think we're gonna have to, you know, write up a fan made.
Oh yeah, thing.
Sheepdogs, treemen. Oh, they can actually have treemen.
So the treemen is cool, and it's. I think they can get treemen allies in Blood Bowl too.
Yeah,
that says here due to their affinity with nature, closeness to the forest, and the number of fat, juicy rabbits living there, some halflings have been befriended by treemen who will fight alongside a halfling army with their trusty friends riding on their shoulders, which is just really cute. It's just adorable.
It's so good.
One of the things that I would love to see, the Reaper and Shearer, it's various pieces of farming machinery are used by halflings. For the most part, they are designed for cutting wheat, but they are also equally at home cutting off heads. There are two types of machine, one heavier than the other. The Shearer is a lighter, smaller machine pushed into battle by two war sheep. Yes, war sheep. And the Reaper is a heavier machine pushed by two battle rams. So that just sounds dope as hell. And you can see kind of like the Shearer, probably like a bunch of shearing equipment on it. And then the Reaper is just like full of scythes.
Right. Oh, that's so good.
But yeah, I mean, it says in here, and I don't know what's canon and what's not, but there's Great Eagle Riders, which would be cool. It's a well-known saying that when the halflings are in trouble, along come the Lords of the Air, the Great Eagles. These elites are often made up of two eagles and their riders. Swan riders, which they usually fly in a V formation. Could you imagine halflings in a lance formation on swans?
No.
goat riders and battle ram riders and war sheep, which is so cool.
Just war sheep.
It's just their own thing. So good.
War sheep riders.
They undergo special obedience training, but are still rather skittish.
Apparently, all of this was in something called The Citadel Journal, volume 36, The Hungry Horde, A Halfling Army for Warhammer, 5th edition.
Oh, dang.
So
I'm sure there was like almost no minis.
Right? I would love to know more about this.
The Citadel Journal.
I don't know what the Citadel Journal is. If that was like a earlier edition version of like the General's Handbook or something. Because like White Dwarf has been around forever, so I'm not sure why it's not that.
The Citadel Journal is a Games Workshop magazine by locals for locals. Wow, there are minis. I'm going to send you that link too. That's incredible.
I have not heard of this one.
Me neither, man. Me neither. So the contents have Gorka Morka. Oh my gosh. That's so neat.
So they had a separate...
A whole nother magazine, I guess.
A Citadel Journal? Well, I guess that's not technically... Like Citadel... has basically always been a like technically a separate company from GW in a weird way. kind of like how Forge World was for a long time and everything. I don't really know how that all worked, but
there. So, ladies and gentlemen, there are Swan Riders on the front of this magazine, and the flying base is, it's got to be 4 inches tall.
Oh my God, for real. There's just a cow pulling that thing. They got little speech bubbles of one of the sheep riders just says, bah.
So tree men say, what are you doing here, Eric? Well, you've got to branch out a bit, isn't it?
It's so awful and amazing at the same time.
This is incredible.
I want to read this. This is so good.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. I'm impressed. There's always this. One of my favorite things about Warhammer and Warhammer Fantasy in the old world and everything is like, as much as I know about it and as much as I've read and experienced, there's always more that I've never even heard of.
Yep. Yeah.
It's so when you have like, what, almost 50 years of lore? No, it's got to be over 50 now.
Yeah, at least 50. Yep.
I guess not quite. It was 40 something. But still, like, this Citadel Journal. Like, this is amazing. This is not White Dwarf, but it was coming out concurrently with White Dwarf. It's Halfling-tastic. Swan Riders, Crazy Cooks, Battle Rams, Poultry Swarms, Rabid Halfling Housewives, not to mention Warsheep. What a bleeder! It all says on the cover of this magazine. Oh my God.
I just found a section on religion, and I can't get over this. A very very well-known halfling saying is deep thoughts butter no parsnips. Showing their typical disdain for the philosophical.
Yeah, they don't really care much about religion. They've got Esmeralda is like their god. But really, it's just whatever excuse they have for celebrating and having pies.
Yeah. The goddess of the home and hearth, whom Pie Week honors. Pie Week is every week, isn't it?
Josiah's there is Pie Week. There are celebrations involving pies pretty much every week.
Josiah's the farmer. Hyacinth, the goddess of fertility and childbirth. Gaffy, the god of building and villages.
My old Gaffy.
And
Quinsberry.
Quinsberry, the god of ancestry and tradition.
It says they also worship some of them worship some human gods. Specifically Sigmar, Tal, and Rhea, which makes sense because Sigmar, I mean, they are part of the Empire and everything, and Tal and Rhea are like the nature gods, so that totally tracks.
Yeah, apparently they have no priests or temples in the Moot, but there are some shrines, except for, you know, the temples built by Sigmarites.
Yeah, true.
You don't have a witch hunter come in and be like, why don't you have a temple?
And they'd be like,
I don't know.
Well, what is this fancy pistol that's ours now?
Have you thought about eating pie, though?
Oh, that reminds me of a major thing with halflings. They can't do magic.
Yeah, I was just reading that. Yep.
They are, like in the role-playing games, they get like resistance to chaos. Halflings almost never mutate. Mm-hmm. One of the things that the old ones gave them to kind of sort of balance out their, you know, physical limitations is that like the winds of magic practically don't flow through them at all.
Mm.
They cannot be wizards of any kind. They can never manipulate the winds. They can't do magic, but that means the winds and chaos doesn't affect them like almost at all. And my favorite thing about that is it is a direct reference to hobbits resisting the One Ring just naturally,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, compared to humans. So in the Warhammer world, they kind of twisted that to say like, you know, magic just doesn't really work on them well. So like their whole army should be MR2, you know, if they got an army, the magic. Well, I guess not, because they don't have magic resistance. Oh,
my God.
What's that?
There's a paragraph here. In fact, halflings are not naturally magical beings. Magic just happens to them. Magic rings, in quotes, happen to be found.
That's so good. Yeah, so they could have magic stuff in the army, but they'd all be bound items. Now, so it's interesting. It says they have no priests. I think they could potentially still enact miracles.
Yeah, probably.
You know, again, talking like at a role play view of it, you know, miracles are a separate thing from casting magic because the gods are real in the Warhammer world. They could get them to help out that way, but they can't do anything magical, which is too bad for them.
There's a fun thing here. It says there is such a thing as a halfling wizard. And then down below it says that that's also not true, that can't happen. It says, but the time it takes to study is often better spent on more fattening exercise, eating, for example.
What? Well, it's interesting because, you know, Warhammer, again, it's been around for so long that the lore has changed significantly over time. So, like, right now we are running a Patreon exclusive WFRP campaign from the Doomstones campaign, called Valley of the Doomed. And in it, at one point, they stumble upon like the skeletal remains of a dwarf wizard, and they have to figure out how to break this spell to get into this room, which took them forever because, of course, it was a very simple solution and they just didn't think of it for 20 minutes. But because that was written in like 1990, things have changed significantly since then. So it was like, well, I can't have a dwarf wizard here. That's just too against the current lore of Warhammer. And for a long time, dwarves haven't been wizards. So it was like, hey, he's just a human that worked with the dwarves, that was very close with them.
That has been known to happen, that dwarves befriend wizards, although they're usually kind of kept an eye on very closely.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, wizards are one step away from, you know, turning into demons or something. Or summoning demons.
Oh my gosh, I just can't get enough of halflings, dude.
They're so fun. It was going to inspire me to work on that campaign some more. I didn't realize Bastion and I had gotten 10 pages.
Oh, hell yeah.
Single space, too. There's even a, what's it called? There's even a stat block for Dagobert Old Dag Heathland. I'm not sure what he is. Probably the mayor of Gipful.
Bless you.
Halfling towns have awesome names like Funzig.
What?
It's Funzig.
Of course it is.
Funzig. I don't think you pronounce the P there. there's Serapful. Half and half.
Oh, that's great.
That's the name of their language.
Stop. No, it's not.
So it's called Moodish, but they halflings call it half and half. Because it's like pig Latin.
Of course it is.
Right. So it says this language is a conglomeration of since lost ancient halfling tongue and every other language they've encountered. It contains a bit of Grumbarth, the ogre language, classical, which is like Latin, and some Reichspiel. And indeed, some Reichspiel words come from half and half, such as the halfling, which is a Reichspiel mangling of Hafen. Since the language is related to Reichspiel, most Mootlanders can switch back and forth easily and drag words and conventions back and forth. So I love some of these examples of like how to talk like a halfling. Vowel lengthening. Short words that end in vowels often have extra vowels added or used as links to the next word. How do you do becomes who do dee. And no thanks simply becomes noot.
Noot.
Says so dropped consonants, where two or more consonants are together, the extra ones tend to disappear. So halfling is halfen, farmer is farmer, hungry is honey, and ogre is ogie.
Ogie.
I love the hand gestures. Emphasis and a sense of scale can be added not with words, but with adding hand gestures, which to outsiders seems unrelated, confusing, and obscene. For example, someone addressing a crowd may not say gatherings to you all, but simply shout, who do? And the arm gesture expresses to everyone. Taylor's falling out of his chair.
Who do?
And it's H-O-O-D-O-O. Just even better. Who do?
That's so good. Oh, man. Oh, whoever wrote all this halfling lore had the best time.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I want a halfling army with ogre mercenaries now.
All right. That's going to be a Discord job this week. Let's communally write up some stat blocks for these things for the old world, and we'll have a fan-made halfling army.
I just want to name the episode Who Do Now.
Who Do? I mean, I think that might go over better than Cox and Pies. Also, for this army, all the halflings are on 20 millimeter bases. We're bringing them back.
Oh, geez, it hurts.
Whew.
Oh, it hurts so bad.
That was good. I love halflings.
Oh, this has been a great episode.
Yeah.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I don't even know what to say. Who knew?
Who knew?
Not to be confused with Fordo, who was the Friends of Recovery dedicated. It's the only thing that rhymed.
Wait, it's what? Friends of Recovery?
Dedicated to others.
Wow, you remembered. Good job.
No, I didn't. I have it written down.
Cheater. Today's a great fun episode. I want to say we are going to be covering the Wood Elf Arcane Journal that just advanced copies just were released to the wild with all the reviews out there. You know, would love to get on that list. Haven't figured out how yet.
One day.
Well, maybe someday. We'll definitely be going over that. I've been listening to videos while painting about it, and that sounds pretty par for the course. Some really cool stuff, some stuff that makes you scratch your head and go, why is it an 80 point banner that gives you plus one leadership
on an army that has leadership 9?
When their generals are leadership 10, there's something else that does. It's like everything within 6 inches gets plus one leadership or something, but
oh good,
you know, classic stuff. Like, why would you ever take that? It's insane. And you have to have a BSB, which is going to do almost nothing for wood elves anyway.
Right. And then apparently the kindreds are fantastic. So
yeah, it sounds like it's got some really good stuff. The kindreds sound great. So far the army I haven't heard about the Wild Hunt yet, but the other army of Army of Infamy sounds a bit lackluster, but you know, it's one of those things that we've talked about a lot, where the Armies of Infamy are not really meant, they're not meant to power game. They're meant to add options and play the army differently.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm sure we'll get more access to it for ourselves soon.
None of them say hoodoo anyways. So
hoodoo. And then we're going to do a kind of a deep dive battle report episode, because we'll have a couple games to talk about.
Yeah.
We're going to have Brooks on to discuss that narrative event and like everything about it. No, he had a great time.
Oh yeah, we were laughing like idiots.
We had such a great time, he bought us ice cream.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brooks.
He's a good dude. I'd hang out with him. At least twice. But ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see more us, professionalcasual.com has all of your professional casual needs, where we've got our podcasts, our blogs, we've got all the links to our socials, including our twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, where I think Dr. D be streaming right
again,
now.
As usual.
Dr. D's Disaster Zone, where he streams Sunday and Mondays. And then we have, oh yeah, the Power Phase on Tuesdays. And then Ben's playing solo missions all the time. And then Starfinder 2E every so mod Fridays. And hey, leave us a review. Apple Podcast or Audible would be super great. 5 stars would be dope. But yeah, review would be absolutely incredible. I don't know if we've gotten any recently. I haven't honestly checked.
I usually do when we start an episode and I forget. I'll check Audible.
Yeah, for sure. One of the other podcasts that we do, if you're into Warhammer Fantasy, is the Grim Podcast of Perilous Adventure, Gbapa.
Gbapa.
And it's just a stupid good time. Absolutely stupid. If you're into ridiculous Warhammeriness, you're going to be into that show. So you got to go check it out over on professionalcasual.com.
Yeah.
Anything over there, Dan?
I do want to do a little shout out plug kind of thing. At time of recording, it's mid-May, right? And I'm a teacher, so summer is coming up. I have a bunch of free time. So speaking of all this Warhammer Fantasy roleplay, if you want to play some games with me this summer, check out startplaying.games. It's a site that I am going to be running some games through. GMing some Warhammer Fantasy roleplay stuff. So start making your account there. And then once I have my stuff figured out on my end, because it's an involved process.
I'm sure.
But you know, I had to like apply to be a GM on the site. And it's essentially just a place that allows people to search for GMs or games or whatever, and, you know, connect them, and then we can play online. So I'm going to be, my first thing I want to try to do is the play some of the adventures, Ubersreich adventures.
Heck yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. Exciting. I wish you the best with that, dude. That's so freaking cool.
Yeah.
Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, it's an absolute blast. Thanks for hanging out in the Mootland with us. And we'll see you in the next episode. What? Where we are not going to talk about Russia. Even though I went there.
Kislev all of a sudden?
We're going to Kislev.
We could do that as another lore episode eventually.
We'll do Kislev episode soon with bears.
So many bears.
I'm tired because now I'm getting an accent. I gotta go. I love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. Hey, dice always roll sixes, less than leave it at that.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you. On Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2e actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, you can check out, oh yeah, The Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew Wolfthorp actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd edition actual play. And on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, we've got Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of the Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.